Before we begin, Simran and I want to acknowledge that we're recording this podcast on the unceded land of the Eastern Kulin Nations. Simran's recording from her house on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country, and I'm recording from mine on Bunurong country. We also want to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the land of the Yugambeh people, and we'd like to acknowledge and pay our respects to First Peoples elders past and present, and extend that respect to First Peoples listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
I'm Simran Pasricha.
I'm Ryan Hamilton.
And this is the podcast for burnt out divas trying to stay
broadly relevant. Did we do it?
We did
it. Where you been, Loka?
Girl. All over the place, apparently. I was on holiday, you guys. I was away. And I went to a wedding. Where the hell have you been, Loka?
I think just seeing art in Melbourne was really good.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. So just the usual then. We love to see it. We love to see it. Should we get straight into... Wait, no, you go.
No, yeah, let's do it. Let's get straight into it.
Okay, great. Great.
Broadly
culture.
Okay, so I have two culture items to tell you about today.
Yes, please.
Which is crazy. Because normally
it's
I don't
never
have any
before
culture.
Done. Yeah, Ryan is taking the lead this episode, everyone.
No, but it's massive. Okay, so you know Chicago, the city?
I've heard of her.
And you know Barack Obama?
Yes. Oh my God. Is Barack Obama becoming Roxy Hart in Chicago the musical?
I don't know who Roxy Hart is.
She's the lead in, she's one of the characters in
I've never watched
Chicago
it.
The musical. Okay, theater connoisseur.
So anywho, you know how Obama is from Southside Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did know this.
He is opening his presidential memorial library thing. I don't know what you call it. But his big, like, you know how, like, have you watched Veep?
Yes, parts of it, but not all the way.
Okay, that's crazy. But, like, you know how, like, the done thing is that presidents sort of, like, are no longer president. And then they're like, I need to build a library.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. To house, like, the archives and all that. And that's actually, interestingly enough, where a majority of the White House replicas are, like the Oval Office replicas. A lot of these libraries tend to have Oval Office replicas, which I find bizarre. Like, America, you're crazy. Anywho, Obama's just opened the other day in Chicago on the South Side. And it's a bit controversial for a couple reasons, and we should be talking about it. So, first of all, it is built on South Side of Chicago, where Obama's from, right? Which is pretty slight. But South Side of Chicago is a lower income neighborhood. And there's a lot of concerns that the construction of a massive iconic building tourism thing will drive up property prices and displace a lot of local residents, which is tea.
That is very much tea. What is Obama saying about this?
Not much. it's also that neighborhood that it's in is like a very like low rise neighborhood. And I haven't shown you pictures yet because this is an audio podcast and I'm going to try and describe it to you through my words.
I'm so excited.
But it is the main part of it, the visual part of it is a massive, massive gray concrete tower. And it just like towers over the landscape, which is interesting. I think really interesting. Let me just say, I think this is interesting. Deeply interesting.
And so, I'm so glad that you think that, babe.
Maybe I should try and explain what it looks like to you, right? So, like, the Guardian review of it, so it's not actually open yet. It opens on Juneteenth, but, like, they had, like, a review day where, like, critics could come and talk about it. And this Guardian article talks about it excellently, where they describe it as, like, it looks like if four people put their hands together, like, they're, like, keeping a candle warm in the middle, it looks like the space in between those hands, but made out of concrete or granite. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So it's it's like got four sides, and at the bottom half, it like juts out, and then in the middle, it starts jutting back up. Right?
Is this what you want, like your Olympic cauldrons to look like, Loki? Are you happy with this? Or are you not happy with this?
I think it would look great with a bit of fire on top. I will say.
Totally.
Now, it also controversially doesn't have many windows on it. It's got like a bunch of windows at the top for like a sky deck, but it is by and large windowless, which is also very interesting. On the top, it's got like in text a speech that Obama did at Selma on like, I think the 50th anniversary of Selma, where it starts with like, "You are America." And he like, you know, he like hypes up America, which you know, nationalism is a virus, but like sometimes the poetry it produces is awe-inspiring. You know what I mean? Mm. And so then on the inside of this tower is just like a big exhibit, like talking about like Obama's life and like his presidency. And that's where like the replica of the Oval Office is, which is all very interesting. Now, like the whole thing, because like presidential libraries are like set up to be like archives of everything that like the president achieved, right? Here's some major tea for you. Here's some tea. Here's some tea. This is the first time that that a presidential archive is entirely digital.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it like if you go to like a science museum and there's a screen and then it's like interactive and it speaks at you and you're kind of scared of this ominous voice, but you get to tap on the screen?
So there's a bit of that. It's also like attached to like a library. Well, they're planning on building a new branch of the Chicago Public Library in it, which is pretty cool. And it's like attached to a uni. And so like they're kind of like also framing it as like, we're going to use this space to like support the change makers of the future, which like, you know, I love a bit of marketing copy. I think that's so cool. Mm. But yeah, it's just very divisive because it looks like a giant gray spaceship that's just landed in the middle of Southside Chicago. And I...
How interesting.
I just find it very fascinating.
But I also think... No, you go.
You go. No, you go.
I also think it's interesting that they have, and maybe a good thing that they have, a replica of what the Oval Office looked like at the time, since exactly. Trump is, you know, committed to tearing the whole building down, the White House, that is.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's good to have these replicas, and I guess both in digital and in physical, you know. Yeah. What do you think about the digitization?
I mean, I am not an archivist, but I do know that apparently digital archival is fraught with issues because file formats deprecate, whereas like, you know, it's a lot easier to protect paper. No one's ever kept a USB safe for 2,000 years, but we do have paper that's 2,000 years old, you know?
Hey, and that's the tea. And write that shit down.
Yeah, no, because, yeah. And where is the iCloud drive from, you know, Jesus's time?
No.
That's what I'm still wondering.
I've always said that. And it's like USB-C, you know what I mean?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. What's your other culture situation?
Wait, there was more tea that I was going to say about it, but I forgot. Oh, okay. So in the review, the Guardian review, which I really enjoyed, I've also been watching it on TikTok, like a lot of TikTok reviews of this concrete thing. Someone talks about apparently Obama, who in another life wanted to be an architect, which is slay. He was very involved in the design. And apparently one of his like big references for the design of it was Constantine Brancusi, who I don't know if you know, but he is, was, I think he's dead now, a sculptor, and he did these like gorgeous like sculptural forms. The National Gallery of Australia has a couple of them, and they're just like stunning evocations of like birds in flight and stuff, but very like cool and cunt. And I don't know, I was just like, wow, I love that that was the reference.
Totally, very cool and cunt, as they say.
You don't know who Constantine Brancusi is, do you?
No, but I love their name so much, and I hope that they're your diva, if I'm broadly your diva.
And then my other culture item is, I don't know if you're watching this new TV show, which is happening in the UK, called Tiptoe. Are you watching
it? I am not, which is so surprising because I watch everything. Like, if there's a TV show out there, I watch everything. I think you're the only person where, like, we will have shows that don't overlap at all. Like, I don't understand. Why? You don't want to watch Off Campus? Come on.
Oh, I don't want to watch Off Campus. No.
Okay.
But so
you hate hockey.
Tiptoe's kind of been in the news because I don't know if you know the series creator, Russell T. Davies. Are you familiar with that name?
I don't think so.
That's
how
crazy.
Do I know him?
How don't we know Russell T. Davies? Russell was the architect. You know how the Doctor Who came back in 2005? He was like the guy behind that.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
And this is why I don't know him. Okay, sorry, I'm sure he's great. I just, you know.
He also wrote
Again,
Queer
we don't
as
have
Folk.
Overlap.
He wrote Years and Years.
Anyhow. I am looking at him. And he wrote Tiptoe.
Yeah, yes, which I'm talking about
oh,
today.
Oh, I know Years and Years. Okay, yep, okay.
Years and Years.
We know him. Yes.
So Russell, what was I going to say? Russell, I think, is an interesting artist. He did Queer as Folk, which was like really massive for queer representation on TV. Like when it came out, it was like the late 90s, and it was like really queer and horny, which, you know, love for him to push boundaries. Anywho, Tiptoe is this show about like a gay bar owner living next door to a straight family. Mm. And sort of like the tension of that in like the contemporary UK. And it kind of makes it, I started watching it because I saw this TikTok clip from like the show where it was like the main character and like this another gay character talking about, one of the characters was like, can you imagine? Like, at least it's not like the 1996 anymore. And then the response was like, it's worse than 1996. Yeah. And it's kind of like talking about the way that like, you know, queer rights are getting rolled back in the UK massively, especially for trans folk. But here's the controversy behind it, the news story, right? Keeping in mind that I have watched both episodes, so I have some more nuance to share. So he was talking about the show in an interview, and he said, quote unquote, I've got friends who are gender critical. It's only online you end up screaming and shouting and being attacked by them. In real life, you have a chat and we all kind of sigh and put up with each other. That's how the world works. It's actually how the world is ceasing to work. Which I think is a really bizarre take, and I can't reconcile with what the fuck he means by this quote, having watched the first two episodes, which like very much are like having a nuanced and considerate representation of trans people. And I'm like, what the fuck do you mean you're friends with gender critical people? But anywho, he's getting massively canceled on the internet for it. And I think it's very interesting because he's kind of suggesting that like maybe the solution is listening to conservative voices, which like, that's the same bizarre thing Josh Thomas said. And I think Josh Thomas is stupid. So you know what I mean?
Okay, this is like so interesting because what I took from that when he said being friends with like gender critical people is like people that are questioning their own gender. You know, that's so funny that that's what I took from
that. I love that. No, but like, because gender critical is like TERF. Like,
okay, I understand. I feel like what, like 20 years ago, maybe even like 10 years ago, it was like an okay conversation to be like, we should be all listening to each other. And like, to a degree, yes. But like, when it comes to like rolling back like actual human rights, that argument goes out the window.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we used to be talking about like if I had like more conservative friends, which I think I did. I like definitely had like, you know,
Well, you were famously going to vote for Trump in 2016.
That is just not true. And I. And you need to stop spreading that rumor. You're going to get me canceled for no reason. And okay, so anyways, I'd say like I had more conservative friends at one stage of my life. Not even like that conservative. But
do you
I
mean
feel like,
when we went to school together?
Like, yeah, because we grew up on the Gold Coast. So like everyone comparatively is more conservative, respectfully. Like I, you know what I mean? Like we grew up.
No, with due respect, we went to school with Zionists.
Yeah, we sure did. But we, and I mean, sure, I'm sure like so many are, who knows? Why are we dragging so many people for no reason? Anyways, what I'm trying to say is that the stakes are so much higher and the label of conservatism is so much more extreme at the fault of these people. So it's, you know, this argument is like thrown out the window and it doesn't work for this day and age that we're in right now, especially when like the resistance needs to be more intensified to get us out of this situation, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, like the conversations aren't working, clearly. Everything can be like, it's important to keep the conversation moving forward, but that just can't, like, that's not it, you know? That's like, they're not listening, babe. Like, and that's my tea after dragging the whole of our cohort, apparently.
I'm still like optimistic for the show because, so like, this isn't a spoiler. In literally the first 10 seconds of the show, it like, shows the main character dead, being hung from a light pole. And then it's like 10 days earlier. So the show is like tracking like presumably how he dies. Don't know how it happens yet, obviously. And so like I think it's like really going to explore the way that like homophobic and queerphobic violence is playing out in the UK. But I'm like, that's just a weird take. I don't know what's going on. But I will say, I'm really enjoying the show so far because Russell obviously wrote Doctor Who, and I don't know if you've seen Doctor Who, but half of the show is just like inspiring speeches about how we're all humans together. And in Tiptoe, like every episode I've seen now, which is two so far, characters will just like suddenly have their like little Doctor Who monologue where they're like, the world is blah. And it's, I love that shit. I love a bit of didacticism.
Totally. Ooh, that's a fun word. Okay, this is not at all to do with the culture bits, but you said the word spoiler, and I would like to go on a bit of a rant about people who care about spoilers, okay?
I'm with you on this.
Sorry, I'm sick of it. Like, there's no need to, like, get so up in arms about avoiding spoilers. Like, at some point, you have to, like, understand that you are part of the internet world now, and, like, either just don't go on your phone if you don't want to, like, see spoilers at a certain time. Like, it's called self-control, okay? You are the master of your own destiny at some point, okay? Stop.
Or watch the thing.
Or watch the thing. I don't know. Like, I'm not in charge of your schedule. Like, I'm not living my life according to your watching schedule, so I'm going to say my things online, and it's your problem to deal with. You know what I mean? I'm going to put it in the headline. I'm going to say who died. I don't care. Anyways, I think that people get too up in arms about reading spoilers, and in fact, it's just, like, not that deep. You know what I mean? Anyways, that's all I
yes,
have.
And I
yeah,
think...
as- go on.
Because I think broadly I agree with you, but I'm also like, I obviously review art.
Yeah.
And it's like, part of the thing that I'm thinking about is the experience that I'm having of watching this art unfold, not knowing what's happening.
Yeah.
And then I think part of it is not saying, like, this happens, but talking about how the experience of it unfolding creates the sort of meaning of the art. And so I think actually in that context, not sharing spoilers is useful, because it's not that, like, it's just information, get over it. It's, but it's also how it happens that is the, you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying, but then that comes to my first argument of, you actually don't have to go on your phone then.
Well, sure, but I guess I'm speaking specifically from, like, theater, where you need to go on your phone to book, and also people aren't booking it. Like, it's, the economics are different, so,
okay.
Than just watching a streaming thing.
Why would you go on your phone on social media to book, though?
Because that's
when,
like,
you
how people,
go to the website.
That's how, yeah, yeah, in the link in the bio.
Okay.
Yeah, and check out my Linktree. Did you know Linktree is from Collingwood?
Oh, like in Australia, in Melbourne.
Linktree is from Collingwood.
Okay, true.
I was at work in Collingwood yesterday, and I was using Linktree, and I was like, full circle.
Origin story.
There you go. Broadly news.
I have two news stories. I want to talk about the Patagonia versus Patagonia lawsuit situation. Okay, so lots going on for that. But basically, if you don't know, Patagonia is a drag queen and climate activist who says that she has raised, like, over $3 million for climate activism. She's, like, very big in the space. She's a pretty iconic drag queen, if I do say so myself. And she's, yeah, very well known. And obviously her name is, like, a play on the name, like, the active, what's it called? What would you say? I was going to say activewear, but it's not. But, like, nature adventure brand.
Gorpwear?
Yeah.
You know how that's
the originators
like a genre
of gorpcore? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so TLDR, Patagonia, the brand, filed a trademark infringement lawsuit in Los Angeles in federal court in earlier this year, arguing that Patagonia could irreparably harm its brand by registering and using the name on clothing, events, and environmental advocacy work. The outdoor label is only asking for a dollar US in damages plus legal fees, and wants an injunction stopping Patagonia being registered as a trademark and blocking any allegedly infringing merch. In one of, like, the comments that they, like, wrote about this, like, on one of their social media posts, they said the last thing that we want was a legal fight with someone who shares our values. But ultimately they have to, like, protect their businesses and employees after years of trying to resolve this privately, allegedly. So they said that they have been trying to solve this privately, and now that it's coming, like, out in the ledge. Patagonia has now gone on her, like, own, like, TikTok, Instagram, and said, like, quite a few videos, quite a few statements about the whole situation. They pointed out that while they're only suing for a dollar, the legal fees would like strap them with like more than like $1 million in potential legal fees. So it's not quite accurate that it's just like $4, according to Patagonia. They said this is not a brand conflict. This is a corporation trying to erase an activist. And this is how corporations bully individuals who cannot match their resources. And they kind of emphasize that drag is built on parody, puns, and jokes. And that they are never willing to give them free PR ever again, which I found that interesting because that's the name. Anyways, but
yeah.
anyways, this has caused such an interesting like set of reactions on the internet, if I do say so myself. The initial reaction was very much on Patagonia's side, the drag queen side, like very for the activists, very much being like, you should be embarrassed for going after an activist. Like you guys share the same mission, like definitely drop the lawsuit. Also, it should be said, like, the brand name itself is named after a geographic region. So, like...
Well, but I will say you can trademark geographic regions.
You sure can, but it's, like, trademarking India. You know what I mean?
But that's I'm not familiar with copyright and trademark law, but my understanding is that trademarking is different from copywriting, and trademarking is saying, like, within the category of selling clothes, we are Patagonia in clothes. And so that, I think, my understanding... I'm not smart. My understanding is that the issue is that Patagonia was doing clothes
close to the trademark. Wanting to do merch. Yes, yeah. Essentially,
well,
yes.
Specifically parodying the logo and using the name.
Well, and, yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot of it, so according to Patagonia, they said that in the lawsuit that the brand picked out like fan merch and like not actual merch that they had made. That was like kind of it's still ongoing, so it's kind of like seen that maybe that's like not so true. I did want to refer to like an instance to where this has happened before. So Jan Sport, who is a RuPaul's Drag Race star,
I love Jan Sport.
They like wanted to like change their name to like a different like spelling, and then Jan Sport, the actual brand Jan Sport, was like, hey, why don't we launch a collection together and you don't have to change your name, which I found really interesting. 2024, so that's like a different way that you can do things. I was like talking about this story, and I like wrote a little bit about it for work this week, and I had a lot of lawyers reach out to me actually about what like, you know, trade law is for, and how if you don't practice your trade law and like follow it to a T, then like if something happens in the future, then you don't really have that any like the right to practice it in that sense. Does that make sense? Are you catching my drift?
You gotta defend it, or you lose it.
Yeah, exactly. So Patagonia has released a statement after everything kind of went viral, and they said there's a lot going around the lawsuit we filed in January to protect our trademark, and we owe you an update. We wish this lawsuit had not been necessary, and we want to acknowledge any hurt it has caused, especially in the LGBTQ+ community. We don't want to argue trademark law on social media. Importantly, we continue to want to resolve this. And they said how this can be resolved on their part. So withdrawing all trademark applications, stop using Patagonia's logos, halt selling and promoting apparel and other products under her name, Patagonia. If we can agree on this, we can work everything else. And Patagonia could continue as a performer and activist. We share common ground with them, including the goal of saving our home planet and creating a more inclusive outdoors. Very interesting. I feel like Patagonia is still like very, you know, in her, like they are in the wrong. She says that there was no conversation, and that they haven't really reached out, and that they have blindsided them. So I don't know. It's like very back and forth. But what do you think about the whole trademark lore of it all?
Look, honestly, when it started, because I was on the place where I saw it most was on Threads, and I was like, why the fuck does anyone care? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, why does everyone have so many opinions about this?
Right. I think it's because
it feels like it struck a nerve in a weird way. I don't know.
I think it's because it's like, you see Patagonia is like a good brand by you know, any stretch of the word sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of looked as a good brand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have used, you know, human trafficking and slave labor. But like, yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know that.
No, I've got it here. It's
where,
like,
does that
it's
come from?
multiple citations on the Wikipedia.
Okay. Oh, well, the Wikipedia said that then. But okay, so
specifically,
I think because they, yeah.
Nike and Patagonia were named in a European lawsuit as being complicit in forced labor practices in Xinjiang, China.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, I think because it's like a company going against an individual, you know, which we all hate. And I think because for the most part, especially people who didn't read the Wikipedia, like, you think as Patagonia is a trusted brand. So then to see that, like, trust be taken away, or at least, like, seemingly, we don't know, it's even harder. So I don't know. It's very...
But at the same time, I think everyone's like, oh my God, it's a queer individual versus a company. I'm like, at the same time, Patagonia, you have 2 million Instagram followers at, like, a merch business. Like, you're not just a person. I think part of the things that is complex about contemporary society is that we turn ourselves into businesses, and, you know, capitalism forces us all, you know, Instagram, whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't have any opinion, but I'm just like, it's all, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that they said in their post, like, as a response to the response, was Patagonia is not just, when they're talking about the stop selling and promoting apparel and other products as Patagonia, and they said Patagonia is not just about my upcycled t-shirt merch in that bullet point. They're talking about the partnership work with other brands that I've done year for years to pay for the education, advocacy, and activism that me and my team do. If I can't do partnerships as Patagonia, it breaks the whole ecosystem of advocacy and community engagement. And they understand this because their work is built in the same exact model, advocacy work funded through commercial work. Which I find, again, really interesting, because I guess on, like, black and white paper, I get where the company is coming from. But at the same time, like, they're doing a lot of, like, Patty is doing a lot of good work. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess, and then it comes to, like, the culture of drag itself, you know? And, like, are you not allowed then to blow up if you're going to, I mean, if there's, like, parody in your work?
I don't know.
Like, is there a ceiling?
Legally, maybe.
Anyways, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, the other bit of news thing is, like, more low-key. And I only have 10% of this laptop and no charger. So we're going to get through this episode, baby. okay, so the next piece of news is a bit random. But we all, I don't know if you've seen this, but the rise of One Nation is imminent and upon us, unfortunately, in Australia. And Pauline Hanson, that girl, she just won't stop. And so on the past weekend, Pauline Hanson and One Nation went to the Goomerie Festival Pumpkin Pageant, which is in Goomerie, Queensland. And you might be thinking, what the hell am I talking about this? But I thought it was really funny that as part of the Goomerie Pumpkin Pageant, like, it's an actual pageant. You go and you, like, dress up as a pumpkin, and everything is, like, pumpkin themed, and you bring your pumpkins. And the winner of this year's Goomerie Pumpkin Pageant, which Pauline Hanson was there and she attended, and she, like, went to, like, the she went to the organizers, and, like, she was hosted by, like, the organizer, and made a big deal on social media. And the winner of this year's pumpkin pageant was a brown, queer, immigrant, like, disabled woman's. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Yes, her name is Rain Rasha, and she won it. And yeah, she was a bit she was disappointed after hearing out that One Nation was there and so heavily like around the festival. She didn't expect that. The organizers itself said that allegedly they had 10 plus different politicians from several different political parties and a few independents and are claiming to be apolitical. However, I mean, Pauline's handsome when devs were everywhere. She got like the news there. Like she was doing the whole damn thing. So.
Do you know, I saw a show about anti-racism the other day and guess who was in attendance?
Pauline Hanson.
No. Who was that? The lady with the weird name who was punk and the former liberal member, the liberal leader. Oh my God, help me here. Help me here. She had like, her name had like two T's or something and it was like interesting. Suzanne. Oh my
Susan
God.
Susan Lee. She's yeah. just been ousted.
Fuck me. Yeah. But she was there. It was like this show about like racism in Hollywood and she was there and I was like, girl, what are
interesting. You doing? Interesting. She's like, I'm free. I can finally go to the shows I want to.
She's like, I'm woke now.
Yeah.
Broadly Diva.
We're back with Broadly Diva, baby. Should we just like start it from scratch from the year? Because I don't even remember who we had as the divas beforehand.
I think let's just table talk. We just decide amongst ourselves who's the diva at the end of the episode.
Okay, great.
Great. Okay. Do you have your diva?
Okay. Yes, I do. Should I go first?
You go first.
Oh, I hate going first. I always lose then. But this month's diva is Serena Williams. Give it up for Serena Williams, everyone. Today, she announced that she is coming back to tennis, to pro tennis, my queen, which is very exciting. And I'm getting up the link now. So the 23-time Grand Slam champion, that's right, she's won 23 times a Grand Slam, she'll be coming back to the Queen's Club Championships in London, which will be kicking off next week on June 8th. And it'll be the first time that she'll be in a competitive appearance since the 2022 US Open. And at the time, she said that she was evolving away from tennis, which I really love the use of the word evolving away. And I'll be doing that every time.
Charles Darwin who?
Oh, I want to leave something, but I'm not sure if I want to come back. They're like... You know, like maybe like I'm evolving away from my club days, but actually I'll be coming back next week, you know, like, or what else can I be evolving away from? Like I was evolving away from doing this podcast, but then I came back, didn't I?
When?
Gagged. When I went on holiday. Oh.
I was like, you didn't tell me.
In the sense that I just went on holiday. Anyways, Serena Williams is now a mom of two and she is 44 years old and all the tennis people are like, she's 44 years old. Why would she come back? Everyone like, you know, she's 44. And I will say like, I was looking at like the men's, like when they retire, Roger Federer, he retired when he was 41. So it seems to be like 40 to like 42 that they retire and like go away. It's very exciting to see her come back. And she is actually going to play in the doubles with a 19-year-old Canadian, Victoria Mboko. So I'm very excited that they are both teaming up together. I think like old gen, new gen, which is very fun. Do you think that's like reductive to say? I was just thinking that. I was like, not to pit women against each other, but they're like literally on the same team. But I used to hate when I heard like old gen and new welcoming the new gen in, you know? And then you see all those movies where like...
Like Hacks?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyways.
I don't, but I support your right to say it.
Totally. Anyways, I'm excited to see Serena Williams on the court again. I think that's pretty freaking cool to be a
44-year-old. Come to the AO, girl.
Yeah, come on over. People think that she's, you know, wanting to go to Wimbledon, which I see for her. She'll have to do a couple things in the meantime and maybe go into the singles at this competition. But the vision is looking great for her. When I grow up, I want to be Serena Williams, etc. You know? Mm. I don't know any of her political affiliations. Please don't cancel me. Anyways, Ryan, who's your diva?
My diva is the myth of the Olympic Games as a force to shape cities for the better.
What the hell, Yante? Are you saying, babe?
So I actually think you're going to win today in Broadly Diva. Okay, but because I just like, you were like, you should cover the, talk about the stadium construction that's happening in Brisbane for the 2032 Olympic Games. And I was like, well, I was like, what's the news story? And you were like, they're just breaking ground. And I'm like, yeah. But there's so much like drama around like the Olympics and the way that like, it's like, we got to get this right because we got to upgrade our city for this 1 year. And I'm like, it's a 2 week like sport party. You know, you could build a train anytime. I don't know. There's just something about the way that like it gets overhyped into this thing. Like, everyone thinks the Olympics are that diva, but it's like, talk to Athens, you know, they're not that diva, you know?
Wow, this is so crazy coming from Mr. Olympics himself.
No, like, hold your enemies close, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Like,
go ahead.
I just know a lot about that. They're not above critique, you know?
No, absolutely. Well, I will say that the reason that I brought up the Brisbane Olympic Stadium in Victoria Park is because many First Nations groups are against the build because it's like on...
It's on heritage protected land, isn't it?
It's on heritage protected land. Yes, it's a heritage, state heritage listed green space. So like, why the hell would you build a stadium there, you know?
Well, because like, you know, and this is what I think people don't get about the Olympics is like, it's a political excuse to do things to cities. Yeah. And it's like in the case of Brisbane and the people who currently rule Brisbane, you know, the Liberal government, it's like, well, how can we use this to because the Olympics are these massive things that get so much political inertia behind them. They're a time when you can do massive changes to cities because everyone's like, for the Olympics, fine. Even though it's a stupid two week thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so like they shape cities in really bizarre ways sometimes, like with Athens in 2004, when they wanted to show the world that they were like, here and like, you know, like an economy that's here and ready and modern, and then they build all these stadiums and then that, you know, indirectly leads to like the Greek debt crisis. And it's like, yeah, the way that like Russia wanted to show the world that it was like cool. And it's like, well, why did you build an ice skating rink next to the water at the Russian equivalent of the Gold Coast, you know? Like, they're these performative things rather than like these things that actually like turn cities into better things, or most of the time, you know. Let's not forget like Vancouver 2010 and the work that they did to not build that many new venues, and the venues that they did build were like multi-purpose like ice skating rinks that could like very easily turn into something that was actually useful for the community after the fact, you know. Like, why aren't we talking about that? Anywho,
totally. Sorry, you know how like Eurovision, they say that like, if you win Eurovision, it's like a type of like soft power that you can win.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the Olympics
yeah.
almost and like building all of these things like a type of soft power.
100%, 100%.
That is achievable like within like their own country. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like obviously they were waiting to turn this park into something like horrible.
Well, that, but also internationally, like that's why Beijing 2008 was such a big deal, because that was the first Olympics ever held in Asia. And it was like such a thing of like China at that time, you know, like I don't even think Xi Jinping was in charge at the time, like, but that was China saying to the world, like, we are here and ready, you know? There's just so much politics around it, you know?
Hey, I think it's safe to say that my diva wins.
I think
my
it's
diva
safe
is better, babe. But I will say that the concept is very diva-esque in a like derogatory, diva derogatory.
100%, you know? 100%, 100%.
And there are different categories. So the category is, I don't want diva derogatory to win. And that, on that note, Serena Williams, you've got your first win of the season back, baby. Wow.
Shall we check out?
Let's. Since we've been away, what's something that you are proud of? Okay, so I'm really proud of you for doing two shows in this past month. Very good. And for getting a job. Very exciting. And for prepping our fringe show. So it's like in the mind, and I think that's really great.
Well, hey. I'm proud of you for becoming a Walkley Prize finalist.
Period.
Name a single. It's all I'm thinking about. I'm telling everyone.
No, totally. totally. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, tell a friend and follow us on Instagram if you don't already, and give a loved one a kiss on the cheek. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.